the blessings
of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts, not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. Here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
In the context of the real, it's like hells and, you know, it's like that. You know? So to feel like my, my anxiety about it or my fear or struggle, my struggle, so there's a struggle about it. And what I realized is I was thinking of writing to a friend who I knew was having a hard time and saying, you know, can you be okay with it not be okay? With it not being okay? Because to me that's a, you know, more a higher level. You're less not okay when you're okay with not being okay.
So in effect, you're okay.
You know, okay, right? And then I realized, I'm the one that's not okay with not being okay with this content of this health, which is such a basic experience of my life. And then, in doing something, I just felt myself become okay.
You felt yourself become okay. So, would you say that, like, your, what happened is that? Like, did your attention come out of the story? Did you have any idea?
You know, it was a physical sensation. It was like this warmth through my whole back of my body.
That's interesting, considering that the content has to do with your body.
Yeah.
So there's some, I'm just going to extrapolate from that to time. So there's this thing going on with your body, it sounds like, some health thing. Mm-hmm. You're outside of your body, I think you're struggling with that.
Yeah, desperately wanting it to be different.
Desperately wanting for it to be different. Mm-hmm.
To see a sign of improvement or progress or something, a sign of something other than continuing to be really bad.
So it sounds like outside of your body, in, you know, some part of conditioned mind in relationship to that thing that's going on. And then sitting this morning, you felt a kind of a warmth come through your body. I was projecting you got in your body with it.
Yeah.
And there's something about sitting with Sangha that made that possible.
Yeah, because the belief, you know, when I was playing at home on the floor, you know, it's only 9 o'clock and it's already my second nap of the day, that I should just stay home. And luckily I have my commitment, so I just stay with my commitment.
Ooh, that's good.
It's the beauty of commitments.
It is the good thing about commitments.
Yeah.
That they're there when we don't feel committed.
Yeah. Commitments and policies. The whole point of them is to take it outside of the emotional realm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The whole point. And,
they're having their second nap of the day, even though it's only 9 o'clock.
Right.
There's a part of you kind of really having a difficult time with that.
Yeah.
And your conditioning wants you to stay home with it.
Yeah.
So you guys can talk it over and kind of
well, somehow rest enough to actually start to feel better.
Yeah. Right. Which is probably not actually a piece of what's going on, right? Well, that's actually, I don't know that. I wonder how much of it is something that's going on in your body, and how much of it is this relationship with the initial mind that's happening.
Well, you know, what I was recording about is that, on the way down here, is that, you know, I've had a lot of health things. And what I see about people with health things, and this makes me qualified to talk about it since everyone, is that how our health is a result or reflection of how we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a random outside thing.
Mm-hmm.
We, even though we can't usually see it, we influence how we are makes our state of being.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, and so, I mean, I've changed a lot over many years, but I'm still some way that doesn't work because here I am in this, you know, difficult situation. So it can be like there's something actually wrong with me that I can't be any different to make my health any different.
Yeah, so that chain of reasoning, there's a little bit of something in it that doesn't feel like.
Like cold self-hate? Right, right. If we all have women, that whole thing of if we all make our own health and my health is Jack, well then I'm Jack.
So exactly. It must be well, there's something wrong with you that's causing this thing.
Right, and if I were the right person, I'd be able to figure out what it is.
Right. Yeah. So there's the body, there's the kind of the being that lives in the body,
mm-hmm.
and then there's stuff happening with the body. And it sounds like the being is in a relationship with conditioned mind about what's going on with the body.
Yeah. You know what it is, what's, I think in a way set this up is that, so there's always this belief in our world that, you know, someone outside of us has the solution. It's a pretty strong
mm-hmm.
cultural
mm-hmm.
belief.
Very.
And, I don't want to believe that. That's a nice.
Yeah, up until you realize it really causes us to suffer.
Right.
Yeah.
So I went to a new acupuncturist last week. Really, I was so optimistic for a miracle. Clearly, I've not had a miracle. But, and he said this thing, which really after he talked about it, he said, I feel like you're in opposition to life. Or you have to feel like you have to attack life. And I thought, I've been thinking about it ever since then, that was Tuesday. You know, that takes a really big toll on the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried to just completely relax. I don't have these moments where I think, well, can I completely relax? But it's like only for a moment. I think I'm really relaxed, and then there's these layers of the ways that I'm not. And so I think that has contributed to this place of, it's me, and I have to somehow be, you know, that's, it's contributed to the conditioning and about.
Yeah, and what I hear in it is it's not you, because let's say for a moment that's what's going on, it sounds like it is. There's stuff happening up here. There's, we might say, habits of thought,
mm-hmm.
Habits of kind of the way you relate to life that are going on, that's,
mm-hmm.
that are taking kind of energetic control of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to blame that on you seems like kind of an extra step in the direction of self-hate. What if instead?
I can almost see it.
Okay.
keep perfume.
Okay. So here's my experience of it. When I'm in that place, or my version of that place, I actually don't feel like, when I really look at it, I don't feel like that I'm the cause of it or the perpetrator of it. I feel like I'm the victim of it.
Mm.
So in other words, what's easy to project, just because I mean, this is the way it happens with all of us, this is the way it happens with me for sure, is, you know, back here somewhere where a person can't see it, conditioning is manipulating the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's conditioning that's dropping in these thoughts about everything that the physical stuff that's going on means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's conditioning is leading down a trail to where there's something wrong with you and it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning is probably also cooking up whatever the acupuncturist was pointing at.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking up the stress or the, you know, what I think you call it, resistance to life.
Right, opposition.
Opposition to life, mm-hmm. Yeah. So conditioning, I would project, is the one that's cooking that up. The only thing that you're bringing into it is an unawareness of that.
An unawareness of that.
Mm-hmm.
An unawareness of what conditioning is doing with that information.
Yeah, and the way that conditioning makes you unaware of that is it says, this is your fault.
Right.
That's what it does for all of us. It says, that's what self-hate is all about. It makes a self-consciousness. Oh, I have to look here to figure out what's wrong with me to deal with this, instead of I need to look here, you know, to see what's going on with conditioned mind that's causing this.
You know what I think you might be right on with this, Dave? It's hard for me to track. It's a good thing there's a recorder. Could you say the whole thing again?
Let me say it in a really simple way.
Okay.
Okay. So
there's no guarantee that I'll be able to track
it.
That
doesn't, that's okay. Well, two is better than one. That's all. So conditioned mind is pushing you around.
Okay.
It's making all this stuff up. I think there probably is a good. A lot of evidence that suggests that that's what is happening with the body. In a way, it's the opposite of what you're saying earlier, that, you know, so there's the body is a manifestation of how we are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think conditioning would like for you to believe, for us to believe. It's, I think we could say the way the body is a result of how our conditioning is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely different thing, even though it's happening in the same body.
Right.
So rather than this thing that's going on with your body being an indication, being a motivation for you to find out what's wrong with you,
mm-hmm.
which is the way conditioning wants to make it go, the body is an indication that that conditioning is doing something that needs to be attended to.
Mm. So what you're saying is, rather than the fact that I have this health issue being proof that there's something wrong with me, the health issue is in the proof that I'm being led by conditioning.
It could be, or it could just be a health thing.
Right, it could just be a health thing, but
mm-hmm.
But it could be pointing at that conditioning is having its way rather than, because of course, whenever conditioning is doing its thing, of course, it's going to create problems.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, it's so easy to see with other people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is, yeah. And mostly, like when we get together, we talk about the emotional consequences of it. You know, where the spiritual consequences of it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk as much about the physical consequences of it, but of course they're there as much as anything.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so hard to see. Like, I could see with my mother, like how my mother is in her body is how she is in her mind.
Mm-hmm. Not how she is.
How her conditioning. Well, you're right. I have never. That's mm-hmm. the point. I actually think of it as how she is, but it's how her conditioning
yeah,
is.
Yeah, how she is probably, yeah, I mean, I don't really know, but something like some little kind of bit of innocence
yeah.
in the middle of a
desperate
lot of...
Desperate to be loved.
Desperate to be loved. In the middle of a lot of hatefulness and chaos.
Yeah. That's made our body in this
mm-hmm.
certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So then if we extrapolate that and apply it to me, then all there is this little part of me that's actually desperate to be loved and all this other stuff around it.
Could be. You just projected that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would bet you that the key to unlocking the door to her, let's say that's true what you said, is this place we're kind of dancing around about it being either your responsibility or conditioned responsibility. Because really, I mean, that's what self-hate is all about. Conditioning says it's you. You know, it's your fault. And underneath that, what that says is, don't look at me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see what's going on. Don't see how I'm manipulating you, how I'm actually orchestrating all this. See, if it's your fault, you have to look to you instead of to me to work to get your way out of this. And of course, if you're looking to you, You never will, because there is no good moment.
Yep.
Ooh, it's tricky, isn't it?
Is it doing stuff back there?
Yeah, well, for a second when you were speaking, I thought I could see. I mean, it's like saying, I thought I could see what you were saying, and then mm-hmm. when I try to reflect, because everybody has the same name of I,
mm-hmm.
it's harder to see. So could you say that last part again?
I don't remember the last part was.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you something else?
Yeah.
This is why I can't remember that. Something else. I'm curious, in your recording practice, do you ever, when you talk about what's going on, do you ever move to the place of the mentor to talk about, to offer guidance to the person?
I do, but I would say the guidance, the shifting, I do a lot, and those are, because I'll talk about where I am and then go to another place, but the other place seems like it's offering, like today, it just goes to a place of, you know, love and appreciation,
mm-hmm.
which is different from, I mean, trying to care for that part of struggling, but that's different from, it seems like, what you're pointing at, which is...
Seeing the how of it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was looking at, is I wondered, since you have that practice established already, I wondered if the mentor could talk about stuff like, here's what conditioning is doing. Here's what the voices are cooking up to cause this experience that's going on. Now, here's what I notice that the strategies that are being employed.
Okay. Like, so I would say the strategy that I see conditioning is employing to keep this going. Because I did see one, actually, after recording. I did mm-hmm. see a strategy. Like, oh, well, that, I mean, I don't know that that hurt, but it certainly didn't help. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it didn't stick with the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes, oh, you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the recording about the how.
Yeah, well, like, you know, let's say you end up in that place that the opposition to life place, whatever that is for you. You know, you were talking earlier about how you just have blips where you can just really relax.
Mm-hmm. But it's just a lot blips. Of them, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even have thought of myself as, you know, attacking life, except for...
You said that.
Because, I mean, if you've known me for a long time, I am like the picture of mellow. That's what I used to be. I skate and juggle, for God's sake. That is the epitome of not mellow. So, I think, you know, it's so calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I understand that's only calm in comparison to.
Mm-hmm.
Not maybe...
Hard to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, so whatever is not calm for you is being orchestrated by a conditioned mind.
Right.
That would be really good to have on the tape. I mean, just as a practice, just a practice of getting out of what's wrong with me that I'm having this experience
uh-huh.
to what's conditioning doing to create this experience. And I bet you in the middle of all that, that's where that little girl is who wants that unconditional love.
Right.
But she's closed over, she's covered over by the self-hate, probably. That self-consciousness, what's wrong with me, that everything is not the way it should be.
Okay, so I'm going to record about the how, of like how I'm in these. Or even just the how, just start recording about the how. I don't even have to have anything other than recording the how.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not leaving out the love and appreciation, because that's good too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But throwing out a little bit of, how is this whole thing happening? How am I getting bamboozled?
Uh-huh.
How is this happening? You know, how is conditioning creating this love that is happening even in the body?
Mm-hmm. That didn't give me a lot to work with. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Come on. I'm going to report on the version of being pushed around by conditioning and kind of an update on something I shared last Thursday night in group about how conditioning had slip in to the very tool that was that I had acknowledged was actually taking me in a completely, taking this being in a completely different direction.
So for anybody who wasn't there, who was out there in recording land, then I think what you're talking about is making a recording, and you realize that the kind of conditioning has slipped into the recording a little bit, or self-hate, I can't remember exactly how you talked about it, and was kind of reinforcing itself through the recording instead of, so you're being, it's being reinforced rather than let go of.
Right. And so subsequent to that sharing, the mentor spoke with me and pointed out the timing of that little event, that slip in. So I had, first of all, recognized and acknowledged the power of this tool in transformation.
The recording practice.
The recording practice, yeah. And secondly, I identified through the recording practice two really karmic, big karmic issues that seem to keep recurring. Mm-hmm. One of which is this experience of fear of being shunned. So I had guidance at the Santa Sabina retreat, and I talked about that fear of being shunned, and recognized in that conversation that this tool was the way to actually get beyond that karma altogether, because the need of the person who is afraid to be shunned is to be engaged with, by people. It proves to her that she's okay. Mm-hmm. If she's not being engaged with, this karma starts where she's not okay, people are avoiding her because something is wrong with her. Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the realization during and after this guidance appointment was that I am engaged. I have this tool to be engaged with a loving, compassionate presence.
So it doesn't matter what's happening out there.
It does. It could, you know, and I acknowledge that this could just completely annihilate that piece of karma, basically, that it wouldn't have the power. And that piece of karma was really big in terms of reinforcing self-hate, because the message of it is that nobody wants to be with you because blah blah blah, you know. So this creeping in of this little bit of negativity, which kept kind of growing until it was actually a place where self-hate was acting in the tape recorder, came right after that.
No wonder.
And I, you know, when I talked the other night, I hadn't put those two pieces together, and I don't know if I would. But the mentor came yesterday morning. I woke up in the morning. I almost picked up the recorder immediately. I was going to listen, and she laid it out. She laid it all out, and she, just said, you know, how wonderful this is, because this is a perfect opportunity just to see how it works, how sneaky it is, how evil it is, how it is not your friend, and how we are not going to spend time with that anymore, that she and I are going to be together.
You get two things. You get an actual way to practice that will lead to actually getting beyond that karma for you, and along the way you get to see how it all works.
How it all works. Because, as I realized that had happened, there was this, it was coming around the back door then, and the same thing you were just talking about, making it my fault that had happened, that I hadn't caught that I hadn't been paying attention.
That's what it does.
And it was, and I was thinking back in on that level then, that I'm just, not aware of this horrible thing that wants to eat me from the inside out.
And I'm looking at it as you're probably, go ahead.
Yeah, and so I just saw the second layer of it in that way of making it be my fault.
Yeah, yeah. And in the middle of that, this is the same as the other conversation, there's a need there that needs to get met, isn't there? So like it's not really about being shunned. That's just kind of that's the way the karma interprets feelings that are there that kind of go along with this need to just, I don't know how you say, feel connected or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that need is there, and then of course conditions to survive, it has to make sure that need never gets met.
Mm-hmm.
Because it lives off of the suffering of that need not getting met.
Yep.
And it needs a mechanism to make that never happen. You know, make that need never get met. Now the need gets met when that within you, which needs that, and conscious compassion and awareness get together.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's all over. I mean, there is no...
Truly.
Problem. Yeah.
Truly.
So conditioning has to put something in between conscious compassion and awareness and that person. And what it's just so clever, kind of.
It's very clever. And, you know, this makes me really, really feel like woo-woo-woo because the timing of it was when I had to switch to a new recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And this new recorder allows a looping of the recording, where the other one didn't. You know, it required so much more intervention that everything was kind of jerky. But this thing was like...
If I can get in that loop, well, I'm set.
Well, I don't know if it even knew that part, but that is exactly when it happened. Uh-huh. And the loop, kind of made it more... of a strong, input from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
so the thing is trying to put in the way is self-hate.
Yep.
Because it's just really kind of remarkable how it all comes up with this, but the self-hate creates a self-consciousness that replaces conscious compassion and awareness. You know, the awareness becomes self-consciousness.
So it's looking at itself more than, like the self-hate is trying to blame this person for what it's doing. Is that what you mean by self-conscious?
Yeah, awareness is not, it's aware of what's going on here, it's aware of what's going on around. Self-consciousness, kind of in the way that I'm using that word, is the opposite of awareness. It's a focus, but with an agenda.
Yeah.
And the agenda is, there's selfless. Conditioning says, there's something wrong here and it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And we are supposed to believe that, and we generally do. And so we look to see, okay, well, what's wrong with me that I can fix to make this experience I'm having change? And so it gets all focused on, what's wrong with me? How can I figure that out? And how can I make that different? And the awareness is gone.
Yeah,
and so it's all happening right around that need. And so that which can come in and save everybody, that conscious compassion awareness is that suddenly out of the picture because it's been replaced by self-consciousness. And then behind that, we're just being completely manipulated. And self-hate is in there in relationship with that part that has that need.
Yeah, and the self-consciousness that you're describing has no other result than feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the conscious compassion awareness has just the opposite. It's like a larger perspective, and it feels really good because it's just connection. It's the connection that's lacking in that other.
Yeah, it is. So that's interesting. It is what meets the need.
Yes, it is. Bingo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the mentor is just one way of talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
With recording practice particularly, because it's happening in words, it's kind of a practice of accessing that really big, aware, compassionate place, and having it, sort of way to channel the wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And for me, what's so powerful is that it's a verification and a proof that conscious compassion and awareness resides within, because the ego is constantly feeding in that other stuff that's so ugly. And it happens inside of here in some way, so it's easy enough to believe that that's who the being is.
Yeah.
And so this new, accessing the mentor right in here, not out there somewhere, it's like, really an exposure to the goodness and to the wisdom and to the compassion that's that's here.
Yeah, I think that's, I actually heard Sherry say this the other day, that that's been, she thinks, perhaps what's been most powerful for people about recording is just finding out that it's there.
Yeah.
They can actually turn their attention in the direction of the mentor and the wisdom that they're looking for there. Plus, you know, the connection, the unconditional love, you know, all that stuff that we're looking for all the time. You know, we can't, I feel like we can't find it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's missing. It's just because conditioning is directing our attention.
And at any time, any little second, it just starts throwing it in there. I mean, it's just relentless. It's that's one of the amazing things too, is to actually experience what the being has been, is, and has been subjected to in that regard. Kind of is mind-blowing too, because it's just seen in a way that, to me at least, my experience is that it's seen in a way that just really wasn't seen before.
Yeah, it's like over here in this kind of in the back corner of the room, conditioning and a little person are in relationship, and there's abuse happening.
Yeah.
We're over here somewhere in a conversation with conditioned mind about what's going on, this
what's
and that,
wrong with me.
What's wrong with me? And there's just this huge gap between the two.
Meanwhile, the child is just left alone there too, and that's a lot of the sad feelings that we have, and we don't really understand. Maybe sometimes, I'll speak for myself, don't recognize that child is there, and that's happening to the child, and
all the time. And of course, this is what we're talking about now, because it isn't also another thing to feel bad about and feel like it's our fault.
Right.
Because we don't have any way of doing anything about that situation until we're aware of it.
Until we're aware of it,
But once we're aware of it, then it's almost, it's kind of natural what happens afterwards. It's just, that's not good. And it's not what we want. Yeah. Let's see if we can get in there and take the place of self-hate and make something different happen.
So I'm finding this very helpful. One of the things that, well, two things. One thing I was just looking at as people were talking in my own body, I had this resistance, you know me, to the recording practice. Except I now love the recording practice. Or the part of me that loves it and is finding it super helpful is stronger than the give me a freaking break.
Yeah, it's funny when you said, you know me. It's like, no, that's not what it is.
Yeah, you know my condition.
You know my condition.
It's familiar to us all. You've heard it from me and we all share it. But I just watched this thing. So one thing that I have found, let me say what I found helpful first, because this is what I'm practicing. So the conditioning that I'm talking about, that I think is me, that I believed is me for many years, is, turns her, you know, she's the six, skeptical six. So she's just like, she just turns her attention, and you know, she resists. You know, I didn't take the precepts for 5 years. I mean, I was like the most committed, you know, there and everything. You know, it's just, but the way I watch it at home and the way that I'm using the recording with it is that I saw it coming home from work. So on Saturdays, I work all day long, and I come home, and I immediately jump in and start cleaning or something. You know, what have you guys been doing?
Because everything has happened over Saturday.
They've done nothing, and why don't they? I mean, I believe it. And so I was recording as I was coming home. I'm like, here's what's going to happen. Your head's going to tell you this. It's a story that you believe most days. You turn your attention here, you're looking for that. You know, it was really describing, it's all made up, Susan. It is what is causing you to suffer, not that they haven't done it the way that you would like them to. I mean, this is like a huge breakthrough, right? I mean, I don't know if you can tell, but it's in my life, it's a huge breakthrough. Because for 17, however many years I've been married, for sure, it's not about this.
It's about that.
And in theory, I can believe it's not about the outside stuff, and you know, have little blips of not believing, you know.
Well, it's probably one of those where you get it on this level,
Exactly. But now I've got these things in my ears really saying, notice what you sow. Mm-hmm. Notice that you come home and the children are calm. Mm-hmm. Notice that they've been fed. Mm-hmm. Notice that, you know, that it's peaceful.
Yeah,
you know, notice that you could actually just walk through the house, change your clothes, and get into bed if you wanted to. Nobody's requiring anything of you.
You know, it'd be fun, and this might have been what you already have, but to make a recording that you hit play as you walk through the door.
Yeah.
It tells you all that.
Oh, so, yeah.
It says here's what the, you know, you could even, because you probably, it's just scripted.
It's the same, right.
Yeah, you can walk through and say, okay, the voices are going to say that, you're going to look around, you're going to see that, and then the voices are going to say that.
I need to do exactly that to listen to every time. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's what, so that part of this recording practice, so it seems to be what I mean, the part about it's all a story, everything is a story, and that none of it is really true has been so helpful. Because so often I believe I'm listening to that rather than looking to my experience mm-hmm. and believing it. So anyway, I've been looking at this incessant push against life. You know, I rewrote the karma, incessant push against toward what we think we deserve. So this energy thing. So as people were looking, I have this thing. And I mean, it's just... It's in my body. It feels like, you know, it just feels like resistance. And then somebody hates that it's there. So it's like somebody's talking and I feel it, and it's sort of this sickening, oh God, you know, why do we have to...
That's such an interesting contrast to the story you just told about making that recording.
Yeah, it is what I'm making the recording about.
Yeah.
Because it's what my conditioning. Mm-hmm.
So let me see if this is what you're talking about. For a really long time, this karma's been there forever. For a really long time, you're on the side of it against anything that's going to take it away from you.
Pretty much.
Now you're moving on the side of, you might say, life or practice or center. God, in your case.
Good. Thank you. God, it's true.
Yeah.
This recording.
Moving on the side of that against this karma.
Yes.
That's the fundamental shift that's happening. You're having both experiences. You're having the experience of aligning yourself with the karma.
Yeah.
And you're having the experience of being aligned with life.
Yeah, and there was a way in which, as you said, I like that, you know, I mean, years of practice, I mean, it brought me to this point. I mean, mm-hmm. lots of sitting and looking and seeing and breathing, and I think that something is breaking in daily life with the recording mm-hmm. in a way that I've seen it, of course, break on retreat or even sitting. You know, I sit twice a day. I mean, I sit at home as well. But as soon as I get off that cushion, it's as if pretty soon I'm lulled to. And I think it starts physical with the sensations in the body, like, mm-hmm. all right.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, conditioning has your attention. I think
yes.
that, I mean, that's what's so hard for all of us, and I think that's what's so big about the recording practice, is that it's like you say, we get up off the cushion, and then pretty much conditioning has the attention, mm-hmm. and it's directing in ways we can't see. And so this, the world that we live in is continually being recreated. Mm-hmm. But if we're listening to this other information all the time, it's really hard for conditioning to keep that sort of that non-stop influence over us and to keep little openings from happening where the reality of what's going on is dropping out.
I think that's right, the openings. Because what I notice in my recordings, I've said this before, but I'm like, I sound like Sherry Huber. You know, it's what I've asked for my whole life. You know, I've always said, how do I stay present and talk at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I found it with the... You know, I remember the first time I had the experience of it saying the daily recollection. I'm not talking. I'm being talked. You know, it was kind of that, all right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it's sometimes leading retreats and that kind of thing, I would feel it. But it's as if when I move to the mentor on that recording, I'm telling you, God comes through and starts saying what is so. A lot of the time, a lot more of the time. So what I think I did before this recording practice is I would pay really close attention, or I might turn my attention into the body and kind of, but I didn't have as clear of access to that voice that says, quit listening to the voices.
Mm-hmm.
What you were just told is not so. Right under that I've noticed is, I don't know if it's, I was going to say grief. So I've noticed right behind it is grief and rage. So as I've been seeing this, I've heard you guys kind of talk about the backlash of seeing this stuff and really getting it. it's like, that is not, you know, something comes in and just says, it's not true. Mm-hmm. It is them, and you better start believing that again. Mm-hmm. So that's the rage part. Right.
So we're getting somewhere, aren't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this, who, everything I believed I was, you know, it's like there's this, I don't know if it's ego or holding on, you know, it feels kind of like grief or something, like a belief I believed for a long time was maintained. Who I am mm-hmm. is not so. It's not so. It's just not so. It's not so that externals are causing me to suffer. Mm-hmm. It's this stuff in my head. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, really interesting to watch the backlash of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of freedom and feeling good and connection. Mm-hmm. And then right on the other side of it is this. That comes in.
Mm-hmm. And underneath that is the ego experiencing its death.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Because this is a big one for it, mm-hmm. if it can't get me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you were to live from a place where there's nothing going on but what's going on inside, then there's no way for you to suffer.
I know. Yeah, so you say that, and I'm like, ah.
It says.
Yeah, it says. Yeah, it's before, it's just like that thing. It jumps in and tells me it's me. Mm-hmm. And, well, how am I going to have control in my family?
Yeah, as if that's working now.
Exactly. You want control and disconnection or separation or...
Yeah, I mean, with this new program,
freedom.
You get to come home on Saturday and go right to bed.
Or possibly not come home at all. I mean, like, I have a friend.
Go out on the town. Yeah.
I mean, it's
call
like
me when it's cleaned up, but I'll come home.
It's totally like that. It's like the world opens up. Mm-hmm. I can go home, and I did last night. I went home, and I enjoyed. I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy. You know, they're there. There's stuff all over. They're having a ball.
They're having a good time.
And their mom did not come in and say, "What happened? Get out of there! Where are the cats? Where are the cats?" You can imagine. You can all feel grateful for them.
A good example of the place we talk about is the most compassion for all.
It totally is, and it's somebody's terrified. But I even had my take today. I'm like, "Hey, I've got mine today." Walking down. So I'll just keep doing as guided.
Do Amy, then we'll go to the other side of the room.
Well, I wanted to share this morning, and I talk about this all the time, but I have a hard time sharing in a group, and it's so I guess I'll talk about that. And as during the last show when it was talked about everything's a story, I just had a moment of just really feeling that even like the difficulty that the person who shows up to talk in group has mm-hmm. is like all of that's made up mm-hmm. and yet it's like there's still it feels like there's something to get through mm-hmm. to speak
mm-hmm. it seems that way, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, don't forget what you're going to. It's interesting way you describe that you as the previous person was talking, you really felt that how that's a story.
Mm-hmm.
Just interesting as you felt that. Like it's if you like it just it went in somewhere a much deeper place than, you know, up here.
Mm-hmm.
You could really feel how that's true in you and in your body.
Yeah, I did feel that, and I felt a relaxation with that, and then then I. Someone has to open her mouth and say something, mm-hmm. and it gets covered up or something.
I don't know, somebody doesn't have to. You know what I mean?
Can you say more?
Well, just that I think that's part of the story, mm-hmm. is that somebody has to, instead of just you open your mouth and words come out.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I have very much experience with just opening my mouth and words coming out without there being some sort of premeditation or... Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense, doesn't it? Because it's very likely that same story, mm-hmm. one might say, that is, you know, keep trying to get in your way now, has been there. You haven't always been talking in groups like this, but you've always been doing something probably mm-hmm. that would be, I don't know how you would talk about it for you, but like an expression of yourself or a way to let the heart speak or something. You know, free self-expression that conditioning has gotten in the way of. It's probably been campaigning ever since you were, you know, 1 foot high to mm-hmm. keep that from going on. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that you don't have a lot of experience of what life, not even that's too big, like what speaking would be like without that kind of that premeditated subconsciousness.
Mm-hmm. So now I don't know what to say.
You just bumped to somebody, haven't you? Well, let me ask, can I give you a direction?
Okay.
So without somebody and without that story, what goes on? What would go on, Dad?
What would go on? I didn't hear the very last part.
What would go on? Like what would happen? What would life be like? Or can you imagine? Or just from the experiences you've had, what would life be like without that story, right?
Well, I'm trying to picture it, and imagine I would feel freer and more relaxing, and lighter.
Lighter, freer, more relaxing, lighter.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what else to say.
Mm-hmm. And then another way of asking the same question is, how did it happen this morning that you got through the story and decided to hear your speech?
Made a new commitment. It's been a commitment in my past, but one that I didn't always, I was somewhat successful with. Mm-hmm. And with the Best Year Yet plan, I put a little more focus on it. So there was some determination there to that I was going to keep that commitment. Mm-hmm.
So there's something within you that's not in that story that wants something more for you than the life that happened when you lived inside that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you could say, I mean, I don't know, but easy to project. Wants maybe something like free self-expression, or wants an end to fear and self-consciousness, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All of the discussion has been very helpful this morning, and I particularly like that question you just asked of what would life be like without that story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really been looking at that, and I was looking at it in the context of the email class question that came out on Friday, which was to look at, find something that you're resisting or not willing to kind of take on or look at, and talk to the mentor about a plan to do that. Mm-hmm. And when I sat with that question of what am I resisting, what just kept coming up was being happy.
Being happy.
And I thought, what an odd thing to resist. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, but it's not me that's resisting it. It's conditioning's mm-hmm. resistance to me being happy.
Definitely. And the whole world is full of people doing that exact thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the mentor and I, Sherry, had made a suggestion to somebody on Thursday to have a dedicated happiness track on the recorder. So the mentor and I decided to take that on mm-hmm. As a way, because I think what happened, I was looking in the context of the conversation this morning, and when I was at Santa Sabina and we had a lot of exercises and we're doing a lot of recording and two-chair exercises, and in the process of all of that, you know, my whole karmic system was just laid out. You know, it was just like, these are the stories, this is what they say, this is what you believe, this is how I act, this is, you know, this is how it all gets created, this is what the world looks like, this is who I am when I'm in that world. I mean, it was just like a movie was played out mm-hmm. of how this being gets taken over.
Mm-hmm. This is your life.
This is your life. And And it was so clear, it's not me, you know, that's the story I've been living, but it's not me, it's not who I am. And I think what's happened since then is that conditioning just sort of clamped this helmet on my head that just said, this is who you, you know, it's like, now that she's seen it, we have to make her be sure she believes that's really is who she is.
Yeah. You know, I know that's not the end of it, but something I've been wondering about is maybe what's going to happen with recording is kind of like the next level, which is kind of like what, you know, Ken Cameron was talking about, mm-hmm. how conditioning snuck onto the recording, mm-hmm. if that's kind of the next thing.
Yeah.
So we get involved with the recording, we get really grounded in it. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, you know, this is the whole deal right here gets laid out. There really is, that's the end of everything.
Right.
Okay, well, all right, what's going to happen now? There's going to be conditioned reaction to that, mm-hmm. and that'll be the next thing to work
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what it feels like. And I just had spent much of the last couple of weeks just going, you know, I've never been happy. I'll probably never be happy. Mm-hmm. This is just the way it is for me. And mm-hmm. you know, and then getting into stories of I just need to go somewhere else. You know, I'm sure life will be better somewhere else.
Yeah. And again, just like Cameron was saying, the timing of that is,
yeah,
is interesting, isn't it?
It was very interesting, mm-hmm. yeah. So, you know, and the mentor, she just said, you know, if you have a lifetime of living life this way and seeing life this way, it's not going to disappear from your body overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take some reprogramming. It's mm-hmm. going to take a commitment to doing everything we can to change the story.
Mm-hmm. And we have a way of practicing
that. And we
that.
Have a way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fun to think about, a dedicated happiness
yeah.
folder in your
yeah.
recorder.
So I've been singing silly songs into it and, you know, all kinds of things that bring a smile to my face. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun now. That's the one I want to listen to all the time. You know, mm-hmm. now it's kind yeah. of...
Hard. It really points to the thing Sherry has been on in recent times, you know, what you practice is what you have.
Yeah.
But that's the only
yeah.
thing that's going on.
Yep.
A life of practicing yeah. not being happy and practicing not
yeah.
being happy,
mm-hmm.
really creating that, because of course there's nothing to not be
yeah.
happy about.
Yeah.
And now a practice of being happy.
I know.
And it's something
yeah.
that we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, really practicing that, being able to turn the attention away from the other and to the new stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's... yeah, it takes a real commitment and a real effort, because, I mean, I could just feel conditioning go, no, this is your story, you know. No, this is your story. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember this one? You know, it's like, yeah, I remember that one.
All too well.
I know, sometimes when I listen to my recorder, because I just had to get a second recorder too, because the other one filled up, and when I listen to it, you know, sometimes I just go, oh God, there she goes again. You know, just, do I have to listen to that one more time?
It's a good reminder. I actually had that experience this morning when I was listening to a recording of something I was saying when, I'm not quite there. And I was going through, okay, come on, mentor, I know you're out there somewhere.
That's right.
You're coming. But in the meantime, it's like, oh, God, I'm sorry. And I just so see how the reality that the person who was speaking in the recording is not reality.
Yeah.
It's painful, but it's really helpful.
It is, yeah, I know. And I always, and I often when I listen to things again, I mean, I might be listening to it for the umpteenth time, and I still will hear something different, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I see, you know,
it's always new, isn't it?
It's always new, and just hearing it a little bit different, or maybe my attention will drift off for a little while, and it will come back right at something that mm-hmm. I'll go, wow.
Yeah.
I think I missed that one before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Brian.
Just listening to the conversation has really kind of brought to my attention. Just a long time ago, kind of reading some Catholic saints and their description of the process of, you know, coming into union with God and how painful it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because just, you know, tapping into this huge, expansive place and then realizing that they've lived their entire life in this tiny little,
mm-hmm.
you know, painful corner, and then that being taken away slowly but surely, and just every kind of step is painful but liberating.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of what I've heard has brought that up.
Yeah, just kind of the pain of just having ego ripped away while we practice going to that larger place, maybe.
It's like realizing you've lived your entire life covered in band-aids. You have to take all of them off.
Take all of them off. Yeah. And it feels good to have them off, but it's there's a lot to go through to get there.
What I've been looking at recently, though, is it just dawned on me that, you know, I've read some Buddhist stuff, and they keep talking about the senses, and every time they do, there's six of them. And I don't know how I missed that. wait a minute, I remember elementary school, we were told there were five. And they put mind
mm-hmm.
as a sense organ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's eyes, mind. Kind of the same thing, and then thoughts are kind of the object of that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And really being with that and realizing kind of the implications of that, because, you know, if I'm somewhere and it's cold, you know, and so my skin is just giving me this information constantly. Cold is going on. But I don't have to take that personally. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not a reflection on me that my skin is saying that it's cold. That's just something that's going on that I'm perceiving.
And, you know, just biology. It's just basically what the body's doing.
Mm-hmm. And if mind's relationship to thoughts are then on that same level, then I don't have to, you know. So the mind is reporting that these thoughts are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. You know, and what's happening is that there's the perception, the awareness that that's going on, but it's not something that needs to be personalized.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it is personalized. I do take it personally.
Well, you know, what I was looking at as you were saying that is, you know, it's interesting with all the senses, the kind of what happens when conditioning gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because without conditioning, you know, the body experiences sensations, you know, that the mind calls cold. But it's just, there's just sensations in the body. You know, there's mm-hmm. something out there that there's a method for sensing it. With the mind, it's kind of the same thing. That's one of the implications I was seeing as you were saying that okay, well, the eyes sense what's there on this visual level, and the ears sense what's there on this auditory level. The mind senses what's there, I don't know how you describe it, but on the level of insight, maybe.
On kind of a consciousness
level, yeah. You take See, the thoughts, I wonder, you know, I wonder if the thoughts are part of that, or if the thoughts are just the kind of what conditioning does with that.
Well, that's kind of where I've been exploring. My experience is that the thoughts are just kind of this, I could go very geeky metaphor for it, but it's kind of an interpretation layer. So, sensation of what's going on in consciousness, and then if I'm going to put that into a format where I can communicate it.
Like an interpretation?
Yeah, it has to all get pushed through a layer so that I can then put it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that process seems to be big enough that it can be kind of, it can go horribly, horribly wrong and try to make itself all that is.
Right, yeah, conditioning kind of, in the thoughts, conditioning slides itself in there and starts to manipulate the insight and have it come out of that little process as something that's very different from that.
Mm-hmm. And the other, so the other side of that, though, is that if all of these things are equal, then, you know, my conception has always been of conditioning as this thing that happens in thoughts. But if thoughts are just one of all of these different kind of sensory experiences, then it's, oh, that implies that conditioning can be everywhere in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been noticing recently, for example, that when I come back to awareness, my body is always in a not helpful position.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I lose track, I'm sitting here and I'm slumped over, and I go, wait a minute, because, now my back hurts and my legs are kind of wonky. And seeing just kind of recently, nothing changes that I can discern in the world, but then suddenly something in my sensory awareness changes. So, like, some part of my body starts to kind of hurt, and it doesn't feel like it started hurting. It feels like, it hurt a little bit, and now it's just being really selectively emphasized.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of times where that happens, and it's like, okay, wait for it, and there's a story.
There it is.
Mm-hmm. It's happening on every level, mm-hmm. being set up so that, the way that I feel is sort of this prelude to making it believable when I'm told what that means.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why Sherry will talk about that practice. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Movement, sensation, thought, emotional kind of reaction, and the behavior. We start off way out of behavior, waking up and, we're just torn apart to whatever, throwing the thing through the window or whatever. And there probably was something going on there. And then seeing if we could trace it into the level of sensation. That's kind of what I hear you doing.
Mm-hmm.
Is because if you can be aware at the level of the sensation as the story comes up, then you're sort of interceding at the place where conditioning is creating itself.
Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of this, if I see something happen in the body, then it gives me a little bit of chance to prepare for what's going to happen in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that they're all kind of happening on the same level and each supports the other. So sometimes I don't know if I felt the tightness in my neck and then got the story that I was feeling frustrated, or if I got the story that I was feeling frustrated and then started feeling the tightness in my neck.
Mm-hmm.
Did I look to the neck when I got the story,
mm-hmm.
or did the sensation in the neck cause me to look to the story?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, and either way, the sensation in the neck, if you keep your attention on that, then the story goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's our time. Thank you.